Tonight, we have a novelist on board. Her name is Keitha Smith, and she has published 5 books. 4 of them are novels and 1 nonfiction. Now, I've read 2 of her books, and I'm very excited to have her on the show with us. Welcome, Keitha.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here.
Great. Keitha, you describe yourself as an Aucklander from the shore, a novelist, wife and mother, and observer of human nature. And you're married to Paul, who is from Liverpool, who designs a cover for your novels.
He certainly does. The only one he didn't do was my non-fiction one, because that was traditionally published by a company in the States. So.
Oh, okay. So your novels, the one I read is called The Tender Conflict. And it has a picture of a door knocker on it.
It does.
And for those readers who probably haven't heard of The Tender Conflict, I'll just read the blurb. So The Tender Conflict is a novel, and it's a story, and the blurb goes, after a lifetime of happy memories in Alfred Avenue, Joe and Elizabeth Wilson decide it's time to move on. At the outset, it all seems so simple. It's one house needing one realtor to find just one suitable buyer. What could be simpler? Yet their decision will ignite dreams, open the door to opportunity, and fuel the fires of antagonism. The quest to find a new owner will find friend pitted against friend, colleague against colleague, and bring about realizations, change, and love. Who will be the ultimate winner of the tender conflict?
Aha.
I really enjoyed reading this, Keitha. I read it last year because a friend recommended it.
Yes.
And I didn't know much about the whole ins and out of property buying in this country. I mean, I didn't know what a tender really meant. So could you kind of explain to those not familiar what a tender is?
Oh, okay. So, yes, basically a tender differs from a ordinary sale where you put a price on and from an auction. With an auction, you have a closing date, and at that date, all the interested parties turn up and they bid each other, and the price hopefully for the vendor goes up and up until finally the winner emerges. With a tender, it's kind of similar, but you have a closing date and you put in a written offer. Mm-hmm. So all the written offers come in at the same time, and then they're presented to the vendor, and then they decide which one they're going to accept.
Mm. So it's a bit of a secret auction.
Yes, it is. That's right. Yeah. And because in this particular story, the old couple are very interested in who will get the property that they've lived in all their lives and loved, the tender process enables them to basically make a decision about who might ultimately end up with the property. Whereas with an auction, you've got no control. It's really the person with the bidder. Biggest purse on the day.
Okay.
Yeah. And so hence the tender conflict is basically the conflict about who's going to get the house. That's right.
And yeah, so in this book, about 3 or is it 4?
There's 4.
4 people vying to buy this property.
Yeah.
And so you find out about why they want the property and what they'll do to get it, really, and their motives in buying it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for Joe and Elizabeth, who are the owners, they've got this lovely big section and they don't want to see it like bulldozed or developed or turned into apartments, and so they have a vested interest in trying to find the right person to...
Yes, well, so it was a home that they lived in all their lives, or they've invested all time and family into it, and I guess it'll be hard to let it go and just see it demolished. And
this is it. Yeah. And, you know, when you see what's happening around Auckland, for instance, with all the infill building,
yes,
you know, all those big backyards that, you know, people had when I was growing up, they're all gone. A lot of them have gone.
It's quite sad, isn't it?
Well, it's, you know, it's progress, I guess. But, there is a certain element of, you know, I guess feeling a bit sad about it.
Yeah. Although this novel, the people aren't in Auckland. It's set in another town that is fictional.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
I thought long and hard about what to do in terms of setting. The setting's very important when you're writing a book because we're all influenced by setting where you're born and raised.
Mm.
Does influence your life and your thinking.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I wanted it to have the flavour of New Zealand without being so specific that it's this particular place or that particular place.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think just by the nature of where places are and, you know, how they formed and what industries make them up,
yeah,
you know, that then makes a difference to how you think about them. So, like, okay. If you were to say town like Matamata, it gives you a different feel from if you say Queenstown. You know,
yeah,
they're two totally
exactly
different places, and in some ways your thinking changes a little bit about those places because of what you know. And so for that reason I decided to make up a fictional town. It's probably most like Tauranga.
Okay, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a tried and true technique that authors use worldwide to make up.
I had pictured sort of Whanganui or somewhere that.
So. See, that's fine too. That's absolutely fine.
That's really good. Now, would you like to read a little extract and give a reader an idea?
So the extract that I'm going to read is towards the beginning of the novel, and it's the point at which Joe and Elizabeth are basically looking for the real estate agent who will sell the house for them. The problem with being a husband, Joe Wilson thought to himself as he stood on the footpath outside Blanchard's, was that it didn't seem to matter how long you were one, you were still damned if you did and damned if you didn't. His wife of almost 50 years had a way of giving him these little assignments, her voice full of harmless equanimity as she handed out instructions as benignly as a grandparent handing out sweets to their grandchildren. Elizabeth gave every appearance of being such a reasonable person that the casual observer would be forgiven for thinking her above setting her husband odd tasks now and then, like most wives seem to, simply to test what their husbands were really made of. But in thinking such a thing, they would be mistaken. Reasonable or not, Elizabeth still had the capacity of exerting unwelcome pressure on him from time to time. This morning, over breakfast, as Joe studied the crossword with his usual degree of concentration, trying to figure out a six-letter word for ensanguined, pow, she hit him right between the eyes. "I think it's time, Joe," she said softly. It took a few moments for him to register the fact that she'd spoken. "Eh?" he replied. She smiled at him, that patent little smile she'd been giving him their entire married life, already three steps ahead of him, just waiting for him to catch up. "I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and we've practically made up our minds anyway, so I think we should go ahead and do it." "It? Put the house on the market," Joe jerked back in his chair. "But have we really made up our minds? Are we really sure?" Elizabeth made a calming gesture with her hands. "We've been over and over it. It makes sense. I mean, at our age, it's ridiculous having a four-bedroom house in a yard the size of a soccer field. The grandchildren are past coming to stay. It's too much work for both of us, not to mention the health side of things to consider." Joe frowned. "You know it's true," Elizabeth said. "Facts are facts, whether we like them or not." "But, well, who on earth would we get to sell the house?" Elizabeth smiled her languorous smile. "I thought Blanchard's. They have a good reputation. Sylvia happened to mention their fees were reasonable, and they've sold several houses in the neighbouring streets lately." "Sylvia? You've discussed this with Sylvia?" She made a face, not in so many words. "She just happened to mention last time she came over that a friend of hers had sold her house with Blanchard's. I sort of steered the conversation around to what this friend of hers had thought of them." Joe had snorted then. "Sounds like hearsay to me." "I could hardly give you the third degree now, could I?" He shrugged. "Suppose not. Which one's Blanchard's again?" "Green and gold colour, on Ellesmere Street, opposite the stationers." His brow shot up. "Not those ones who sometimes wear the green jackets and look like a bunch of frogs." "That's not exactly how I'd describe them, but yes, they're the ones." Joe sighed. "Are you really sure now's the right time?" Yes, Joe, Elizabeth said, cradling her cup to steady it. I'm really sure. So how do we proceed? Phone them up? His eyes had just been drifting affectionately back to the crossword and what a 10-letter word for a tetrapod was when she hit him the second time. I rather thought you might do it, she said, in person. Me? Well, you're going into town anyway, aren't you, today? You could kill two birds with one stone, go into Blanchard's and make an appointment for someone to come around and talk to us about it. Go in? Joe had been incredulous. That would be the general idea. But who would we ask for? I don't know, dear, she said, her voice all reason, the gauntlet of the test lying on the table between them. I suppose you just have to see what they said when you got there. She smiled a winning smile, which on the one hand said, I trust you, but on the other hand said, you better not get this wrong, which was how Joe found himself standing outside what appeared to be a deserted real estate agent manned only by one slip of a girl at the reception desk, the sword of Damocles hanging over his head, damned if he did and damned if he didn't.
Good one. I was just thinking, what is insanguine to me?
Well, you might have to look that one up in the dictionary.
Yeah. This old house, huh? That's so intriguing. Now, Keith, you wrote in your book on the preface, although this page, it says, for Francis and George, who understand all too well the dramas of property.
Yeah, that is my husband's sister and her husband.
Yes.
And, they, at the time when I was preparing to publish, had been trying to sell their house for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, things were not going terribly smoothly. And So I dedicated the book to them.
So you had some real-life experiences to draw on.
Yes, I bought a few houses.
You've bought houses. Did you do any investigations, like undercover of real estate agents?
No, and yes. So two things that I did. So one thing I wanted to do was make sure that I got the technical elements of the tender quite right. And so I found a real estate agent who was a friend of a friend, and he agreed to be interviewed. And so I wrote up some questions that I knew I needed answering and went along and talked with him. And So I made sure I kind of had my facts correct at the time when I wrote it. And then the other thing, too, was that the whole idea of the book came because a house that I had really liked when I was growing up came up for sale.
Yeah.
And it had in the front of it some tennis courts behind these great big hedges, and then this lovely house behind it.
Yes.
And I'd never been in there. So when the house came up for sale, I went and had a look, and I walked all around it. And in fact, the description of the house inside is pretty much exactly what the house was like. So I took notes as I went very surreptitiously. Probably think of a bit strange writing stuff down. And it was interesting because I had the idea about, you know, the people wanting to find the good next owners. And, yes, sadly, the property, when it got sold, the tennis court disappeared, the hedge got ripped down, and in place of it, they built, whoever they are, built two of the ugliest townhouses I've ever seen, and the whole property did get ruined. And so, I kind of felt as though the novel that I wrote was just quite fitting, really. It was kind of like a tribute to that house.
Yes.
And
you wanted to rescue the house.
Yeah, I did. So I had to do it on paper because I couldn't do it in real life.
I suppose you've only got it in your memory now.
Yeah, well, yeah, so that's right. I mean, I drive past where it is every so often and, yeah, I just look and sigh. But it does remind me of the tender conflict, and yeah, it's always nice to be reminded of the stories that you've written.
Isn't house hunting kind of quite stressful? And
they say that moving house is one of the most stressful things that you can do. I can think of some slightly more stressful things, but anyway, they reckon it's really up there.
It can be fun looking in the open homes, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Just sort of checking them out, even if you're not buying. Just, I don't know, to see how people live or, you know, what houses are like.
See what's out there.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about, the property boom in Auckland.
Yeah, it's all been a bit crazy, hasn't it?
It is a bit crazy.
The property values creeping up and up and up. Yeah, you know, I think it's really sad for younger people because, you know, the chance of them getting that sort of break into the first home, you know, is just much
very
harder. Yeah, and, you know, I suppose it is really concerning when you think about how much money people are having to borrow in order to buy houses and how that, you know, if the interest rates start going up, you know, that could actually go really badly.
I just wondered when this whole mortgage thing came about. Surely in the olden days they never had to pay so much for just a house.
No, I think...
You just built your own or... I don't know.
Yeah, you probably had to buy the land and some people probably had the money and some didn't. Way back in, when I was younger, I used to work for the ASB, and even when they were not terribly old as a bank, they were giving out mortgages for people to buy bits of land in Auckland. So it's a pretty old idea.
Yes, but now with inflation and the cost of living and then rates and all the other expenses that go along with home ownership.
Yeah. It's not easy, that's for sure.
Now, Keith, you have three or four other novels.
I've got three other novels.
That you've written. They seem to be all published at the same time, so I'm not sure which one was first.
The book I wrote very first was called Maybury Place.
Okay.
Now, the reason why I published them all at once was because I had had my nonfiction book published in a traditional way, and there were things about that process that I found quite challenging, and because things have really sort of revolutionised in the book world, and it's so much easier to publish stuff yourself, especially as e-books, I just decided that I'd like to have a bit more control about what happened with my books. And so because I had written some in the past and I hadn't actually got round to seeing if I could get them traditionally published, I just saved them all up and published them all at once. It's not the common thing to do. But, no, it worked for me. And, so no regrets there.
Oh,
so, yeah, Maybury Place was first. And then the second one I wrote was called The Bell Curve. Third one was Tender Conflict. And my most recent one was The Journey.
Well, The Journey sounds like one that I want to get into next because it's about a... I'll just read the blurb so people can have an idea. Divine Tour's 2-week walking trip through New Zealand wine country is billed as a trip of a lifetime. Sumptuous food, great wine, fabulous scenery, easy walks and wonderful homestay accommodation. For Lindsay McIntyre, writer and illustrator, the tour seems like a recipe for success. She'll be able to sketch, research for her new book, and most importantly, become more independent. It's time for her to take some vital steps to overcome the legacy of a difficult childhood and move on with her life. Despite her fears and lack of confidence, Lindsay soon makes friends with fellow tour member Eleanor and begins to get to know her other travelling companions, older couple Eddie and V, socially inept Cedric, bristly Bianca, and the elusive Simon and Andrew. How will these relationships develop over the course of the 2 weeks? Will Lindsay manage to break free from the traumas of the past? And what will happen when a mystery threatens to derail the journey altogether?
It's one of my, it's a really popular book. I get lots of really great feedback about it.
Oh, good. It's available in the library, but you can find it online.
Yes, so my books are all available for sale on Amazon, particularly as e-books. I do have some stock of the books, the novels, in paperback.
And
if people are interested, they can reach me through my website. So that's www.keithasmith.co.nz.
Yep. And you also have some information about the background of writing some of your books on there too for
yes.
readers who are interested to find out what happened to the characters.
Yeah, I've got some behind-the-scenes information for each of the books. Yeah, just sort of says about where I got my ideas and how they developed and, yeah, my sort of influences and things that happened along the way. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think The Journey might be my next one of yours to read. But you've also got Maybury Place and The Bell Curve. And there's a little review that for those who might want to read The Maybury Place.
Yes, it's just come out.
So I'll read this one out to you. Maybury Place could be the average street in any New Zealand town. Marrieds, families, singles, the elderly and professionals live in the seven homes in the little cul-de-sac. It's what goes on behind closed doors that makes this novel a page-turner. All is not as it seems, especially after they convene a neighbourhood watch group to deal with new residents in number 7. Kiefer has woven intrigue, personalities, situations, opinions, love, confrontation and deception into an enjoyable novel. Each character is believable. Some attempt to hide history, some weakness and insecurities. Others just keep to themselves, or did until the meetings began. True colours begin to emerge. New Zealand becomes a very small place, and Maybury Place even smaller. Maybury Place covers a few months from an omniscient point of view. While this could be confusing for the reader, Keitha has organised each chapter into sections of more or less parallel timing, so we know what is happening and who is thinking what, except those at number 7. We see them from the outside until the final chapter when all is revealed. Keitha's writing is relaxed and conversational. She has a knack of thinking in each character's mind in a way that shows their unique inner world. Make some time, put your feet up and enter Maybury Place. You won't be disappointed.
Yes, so that has just been published in the New Zealand Christian Writer magazine.
Oh, good one. So Maybury Place, there's no actual Maybury Place, or is there one?
I think there's one in America. I think I Googled, but there isn't one in New Zealand.
Well, I live in a cul-de-sac.
Oh, well, you have to start looking at your neighbours a little bit more closely. So what's going on?
Well, you are an observer of human nature, and it does come across in your novels, like The Tender Conflict, where the old couple who's going to sell their house, like Elizabeth, seems to be in charge, and Joe, who's her husband, kind of lets her go along, and he's a bit grumpy.
And then there's the sort of personalities of all the people who are interested in buying it, plus the main character of the book is actually the real estate agent herself.
Emma.
She's called Emma. And then there's also her colleagues at Blanchard's who are all different
and interesting. And also there's a few villains in there as well, just thrown in, like ones you love to hate or the ones you want to see have their comeuppance.
Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes the real estate agent agency sort of, I guess, industry has not a great reputation for some people. You know, real estate agents are not always seen as being the most honest people. But that's a generalisation, and there's lots of really good real estate agents out there. And I think, you know, I think there was a line I put in there somewhere where someone questions Emma about why she wants to be a real estate agent anyway. And she sort of says, well, you know, someone's got to bring integrity to the profession. You know, there always has to be people, I think, who...
She does come across as a grounded character.
Yeah.
Won't kind of do the unethical thing.
No, which is good because, you know, that's what you want out of a real estate agent.
So they have some commission on the houses they sell.
Yeah, it just depends on what agency they work for, but most real estate agents work on commission.
Okay, so I don't know how much it is. But.
No, I couldn't quote that because it's a long time since I've done any research.
Right.
But perhaps that's what leads to a little bit of the maybe more cutthroat aspects of real estate.
Sure, that's an industry I'd like to get into. I mean, selling properties. But I don't know.
But some people love
it. Some people love it.
You know, they love the houses, they love dealing with people.
It's a very people industry.
Yeah.
I mean, you get right into people's homes.
Yeah. I'm sure you must see lots of interesting things. So, yeah, no, I'm really interested in characters. I love people and I love observing people. And it's always interesting to see what people do and how they react and, you know, why they do the things that they do.
Yeah. The bell curve, I'll just mention a bit about that. It's also similar with different characters and relationships and things. Three women from three generations, three ages, three stages, women at pivotal places in their lives. I just want to read the back thing of Velcro.
Yeah.
It says here, at age 4, success is not wetting your pants. At age 12, success is having friends. At age 16, success is having a driver's license. Shall I go on? At age 20, success is having sex. At age 35, success is having money. At age 50, success is having money. At age 60, success is having sex. At age 70, success is having a driver's license. At age 75, success is having friends. At age 80, success is not wetting your pants.
Yeah, I'd come across that and I really liked it. And I thought that it really summed up life. You know, it is that bell curve. You know, you're kind of faced with the same things at opposite ends of the earth. They say that your first birthday and your last can be the same in nappies and having no idea what's going on.
Aww.
But that's not true for everyone. And so all my subplot characters are based on that idea.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming in, Keith. That's all we have time for.
That's been my pleasure.